And we're live. Welcome, everybody, to the Lakers Outsiders podcast. I am your host, as always, Gary Kester. Joining me today are... Hani actually isn't joining me today. I've got two new guys, well, newer, I guess, joining me today on the podcast. On my right is Kyle Hartwick. Kyle, what's going on, man? Is your heart okay after that crazy finish?
I think that was the best game of the year for me. That Celtics... win was really good, but seeing those young guys finish out the game was just perfect. It was just a perfect reflection of what the next 5 to 10 years are going to be like. So I'm feeling really, really good right now.
Yep, definitely. And then also joining me is Jacob Rude, who, for those of you that don't know, roots for the wrong college basketball team in the state of North Carolina. Jacob, what's going on, man?
I'm doing pretty good. And just for the record, royal blue is the best kind of blue.
It's all about that Carolina blue. That's all I'm going to say. All right, so college basketball aside, even though I'm sure we'll talk about it with some of the questions since some future Lakers players are playing college basketball right now. But let's talk about the game. The Lakers lost again tonight, but it was a really, really exciting game. They lost 118 to 115, I believe, was the final score. In Sacramento, they were down 27 at one point and came all the way back to take the lead momentarily in the fourth quarter before losing it in the final minute. But really, really exciting game down the stretch. Jacob, what were just some things that you noticed in the fourth quarter that kind of got the Lakers back in it?
Aside from kind of obviously D'Angelo Russell catching fire, Clarkson hit some big shots as well, but I know something we've kind of mentioned is Brandon Bass's defense against Cousins was, I don't even know how to describe it. I mean, it's the best he's looked by far as a center and as kind of that rim protector all year. In the fourth quarter alone, he had four steals and a block. I mean, he's given up a lot of weight to Boogie and I mean, he was making plays. He was fronting the post. He was knocking the ball away. I mean, and that was big because obviously to make that run, we had to get stops, and he got a lot of those stops for us, even when they were kind of force-feeding the ball to him. He did a lot, and I think a lot of credit tonight should go to him. That's probably... probably the best I think he's looked, at least on that end of the floor, since joining the Lakers this year.
Yeah, and that's the thing with him. I think he's just kind of gotten better as the season's gone along, right? You know, he's been playing out of position pretty much all season long, and he seems to have success with when it's him and Randall at the 4 and 5, or him and Nance, or something like that, you know, where he's got another pretty good athlete alongside him, and it's not Ryan Kelly. No offense to Ryan Kelly, but that lineup was not working very well. But no, he's just improved as the season's gone along. And, you know, maybe if he keeps on going this way, maybe the Lakers can swing him in a trade for something before the trade deadline. But, Kyle, let's talk about D'Angelo Russell, because he was the star of the fourth quarter and was really the reason why fans were so excited. What were your thoughts? You know, what were your thoughts of his play down the stretch?
Well, apparently, I mean, according to him, we haven't seen anything yet, so that's a good sign, I think, going forward. He just can take over a game, and that's something we saw, I think, really for the first time tonight, was him being able to just take over that fourth quarter. You know, he was playing really well on the defensive side as well. Like, you know, he's the fourth leading scorer tonight in the NBA, but he really helped out a lot on the defensive end. He was helping out basically in the paint with a bunch of other guys, helping out Brandon Bass, because, I mean, Brandon Bass needs all the help he can get, you know, and that kind of helps him get those four steals and that block. When he went down, my feed was about a minute and a half, 2 minutes behind, so I get people texting and tweeting, and I'm like, what's going on? What just happened? I'm so freaking scared right now. I see him go down, I'm just... Yeah, I was like, we can't have nice things. but it was just really, really good to see him even try to play through that. Like, most guys would just want to go out right away, you know, get the rest. But he tried playing through, realized he couldn't run, told Scott that, and Scott pulls him and puts in Lou Williams. So, I mean, he is just – he's going to be so amazing to watch over these next 10 years in L.A.
The thing I love about D'Angelo Russell is he is so confident no matter what the circumstances are. You know, he goes out and shoots 1 for 10, has 2 points. He's still as confident as he is on a night like tonight where he has 27 points on 11 of 16 shooting. So, you know, I mean that's a quality that basically every superstar has, though. You know, they have that confidence. They have that belief in themselves that they're just going to always figure it out. You know, so that quote that he said after the game that, you know, we haven't seen anything yet. If 27 points haven't seen anything yet, then I think we're in for a treat. But, no, definitely something to be excited about. So, okay, so this is a question. We're going to transition to a question now that I've seen on Twitter a lot. And it seems to change every few days, kind of the answer, depending on maybe who's playing or who's just playing well at the time. But I'm going to swing it back to Jacob on this. Who is the Lakers' best player right now?
God. I mean, obviously, after watching D'Angelo do what he just did, part of me wants to kind of pick him. I mean, consistency probably means something, so I mean, I'll say Jordan Clarkson, but I think it's really close. Kobe's there. I mean, I know a lot of people don't like Lou Williams, but I mean, he's been pretty consistent this year, but I mean, there's an argument for a whole lot of guys, but I think Clarkson's kind of been a consistent scoring threat. He's kind of, he's started every game he's played in. I think he's played the most minutes for us this year. Yeah, he has. Just all around, you can see as well kind of the signs of improvement for him from last year as well. Saw all summer long kind of all the stories and the videos of how hard he'd worked, and you can kind of see that. Offensively, he's playing a lot more off the ball this year, and he's still putting up 15 points a game. Which he's had a. There's definitely not been a sophomore slump with him.
Yeah, and that's the thing with him. He still has that chip on his shoulder. You know, I think he was the sixth or seventh point guard drafted in the 2014 NBA draft. You know, and he went 46th overall. So you know, he still carries that with him, and you know. He mentioned last year that he has watched that draft at least a few times. Like, he's watched it quite a bit. And so, you know, having that chip on his shoulder for extra motivation and his work ethic, you know, he's definitely a hell of a player the Lakers are lucky to have. Kyle, would you agree that Jordan Clarkson's the best player on the Lakers right now, or do you have somebody else?
Well, I would agree with Jacob in the way that, you know, there are a bunch of candidates available on the Lakers to call the best player, because we've been playing better as a team lately, which is something that, you know, comes with, you know, winning 3 games in a row, comes with the close game like tonight, is playing better as a team. I do want to personally thank the Washington Wizards, though, for giving us Jordan Clarkson for nothing. But I'm actually going to go a bit off the beaten path and say Brandon Bass has been the best player for the Lakers lately, because he gets thrown into the center position on a regular basis, and he's been consistently better throughout the season. And that's what I like, is he's shown consistent improvement. And a game like tonight, I mean, it's improving his trade value, which, you know, kind of hate to see him go, but he's going to go at the end of the season anyways. He's most likely going to opt out of that player option for next year. So I'd rather get something from him. But all that aside, he's been fantastic lately, and I honestly look forward to seeing him play now rather than, oh, crap, Brandon Bass is on the floor like it was at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and that's kind of the state where the Lakers are at right now, is that, you know, they don't have a guy that's, like, so consistent every single night, because, I mean, their more talented players are so young, right? You know, Brandon Bass is playing, like, really well lately, and hopefully he can keep that up. You know, he's just gotten better as the season's gone along. So that's great to see. Personally, I'm going to... I mean, I'm just going to say, I still think Kobe is this team's best player. You know, I think he still does the most when he plays the right way. And that's really the consistency thing with him is, you know, his shot selection. Is he looking to get other guys involved? And because the ability's, you know, still there to a certain extent, to where he's still a good NBA player that can really contribute. You know, it's just, you know, he's got to take good shots. He's got to be an efficient scorer. And when he's those things like he was tonight, he was 10 of 18 from the field, 28 points, and he didn't even play in the fourth quarter. So, like, if we get that version of Kobe, I mean, you know, it's pretty remarkable considering this is his 20th season and just all the mileage on his body. But no, I think that's kind of the state of where the Lakers are at right now, that they don't have a consistent, like, number one guy, you know, because of how young they are, you know, where their most of their talent is, so...
It's also remarkable that he didn't play the fourth quarter, and Byron still managed to play him 31 minutes tonight.
Yeah, it's. I didn't even notice that. I just looked at his. I saw his point totals and stuff. I can't believe he actually played 31 minutes through three quarters.
I will say, that probably the closest to a nice thing I'll ever say about Byron is that. He kept the starting five in there in the fourth quarter when multiple times, I think, in the past, he would have subbed them out. I know there's a timeout. There's a couple different timeouts. There was an official timeout with 5:39 left, and it looked like the Lakers had kind of run out of steam. The Kings had scored. It was 108-102. And I was kind of thinking to myself, you know, here comes Kobe and Lou, and Anthony Brown's going to go out, and he's going to bring back Larry Nance, and he was basically going to go back to his starters. And to his credit, he didn't. He kept the kids in the game, and they responded, and out of that timeout, went on a 7-0 run and took the lead and forced a timeout for the Kings. So I don't want to say kudo to Byron Scott, but he actually didn't screw something up for once, which is a good thing.
Yeah, it's the only thing I would have done differently. He put Lou Williams in after Russell left because of the ankle injury. I mean, at that point, you might as well put Kobe in, you know, when there's, what was there, like 30 seconds left? Like less than a minute to go, and or something like that. And, you know, you need another shot maker out there like Kobe's done in his whole career, and he was hot in this game. You know, I would have put him in there at least to finish that fourth quarter. If it went to overtime, maybe you sub him back out and put Lou Williams in. But, you know, last minute or so, I personally would have thrown him out there. But, you know.
Minute 46 left when Lou Williams came in, so yeah.
Okay, so yeah, I mean, he was already at 31 minutes. I mean, you know, and he had sat for, what, 10, 11 minutes, close to that. So, but no, I mean, overall, Byron in the fourth quarter just – did a good job by pretty much just staying out of the way, you know, just not overthinking it and just trying to make a correction when it didn't need to be made. So, but speaking of Kobe, Kobe's been obviously the headline of the Lakers season this year since this is his last season. And Mitch Kupchak made some comments recently about, you know, how the Lakers, I'll pretty much sum them up. I don't have them word for word in front of me here, but basically said that the Lakers can't fully move on until Kobe is gone, until he's retired, kind of out of the way, although he didn't mean that in a negative way. But and he said that the focus for the rest of this year is basically Kobe's farewell, and the development of the young guys is kind of put on the back burner. So I'm going to swing this one to Kyle. Kyle, what are your thoughts on these comments? Do you agree with them at all, or, you know, should the player development be first and foremost, or what do you think?
I don't think that those things are separate. Like, you can't do one and also have the other one. I think you can totally develop the players while also giving Kobe a proper farewell. You don't need Kobe to play, you know, 30, 35 a night for him to say goodbye to Houston or Sacramento or Dallas or whatever. And also, the young guys that we have are two point guards and a power forward. Kobe isn't necessarily taking away minutes from those guys. So, like, why do we need him to be the focus when you can have both? it's not one or the other. So I completely disagree with Mitch, and I think, you know, Jacob has a lot more to say about that. Obviously, he wrote the article, so.
Yeah, for those of you that don't know, Jacob did just write an article for us, I believe it was yesterday or 2 days ago, here in the last 48 hours, just kind of discussing his thoughts on Kupchak's comments. So, Jacob, I'll just let you take it away.
Well, I'll say my first thought was a little bit of surprise. I mentioned this, I think, to Harrison, that Kupchak is usually kind of so measured in his words, and he doesn't really say things too, I guess, outlandish or anything like that. So when I saw, I guess, what he had said, it was just kind of, why? Like, why did you need to say that? What good does it do? But, I mean, I've had this discussion with a couple people on Twitter. It's just kind of mind-boggling that they're letting Byron do what he's been doing without any kind of consequence or anything. And for forever, you're kind of sitting there wondering how the front office can let him, you know, publicly call out Julius Randle or, you know, play Lou Williams over D'Angelo Russell in fourth quarters. And then Mitch makes comments like this, and you kind of realize the front office is almost enabling Byron, which is incredibly frustrating. To a certain degree, I'd always kind of blindly hoped that the front office was kind of in on the tank, so to speak, and that they had hired Byron kind of knowing what they were getting into. But, I mean, the more they make comments like this and the more they kind of let Byron parade around and talk about how he called out Julius Randle in private, which that whole situation was just bizarre, and that's just the most recent one. But, I mean, the more all this kind of goes on, the more you wonder, like, does the Lakers front office, are they in on it, or are they really kind of this bad? And I kind of mentioned in the piece a little bit, I mean, they've done, obviously, a great job drafting in recent years, and we obviously are seeing the dividends to that. And not only drafting kind of the top guys, but I mean guys like Clarkson they got in the second round, like Larry Nance, who a lot of people questioned, guys like that. But and then, I mean, their signings, I know they've missed on a lot of people, but I mean they get guys like Ed Davis, they got on the minimum, they got, you know, Nick Young when he first came here on the minimum, which was a great deal. Both Brandon Bass and Lou Williams are on good deals, which just kind of makes you wonder how they can be so good in those areas and just continually strike out and when they're looking for a head coach, and then just kind of continually strike out with how they're handling Byron and how they're handling kind of Kobe's whole farewell thing. And Kyle made a great point. I mean, having a farewell tour for Kobe and developing the players aren't mutually exclusive. Like, you can do both of them, and I don't know why they feel that they have to put development on the back burner. It's very frustrating as a Lakers fan, obviously.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, it's really not that hard for them to find the balance between the two, right? I mean, even Kobe said after this game, I don't remember who tweeted it out, but Kobe likes actually watching the young guys take over the fourth quarter in games like that. He said that it's fun. You know, he enjoys it. So, you know, you can play Kobe 20 to 25 minutes in, you know, a game, and the fans are still getting to see him. And, you know, like me personally, I'm going, the Lakers are at Portland here in a couple weeks, a little over 2 weeks from now. And I'll be at that game, and, like, obviously I want to see Kobe play because it'll be the last time I ever see him play in person, but, you know, I'm so excited to see D'Angelo Russell and Julius Randle and, you know, all the young guys. For me, it'll be the first time I see those guys. So, you know, I think fans are excited to see those guys as well. So finding that balance, and Kyle mentioned it, Kobe doesn't really play either of their positions. You know, he's been playing small forward most of the year. So you can keep Clarkson and Russell out there with Kobe, with Randle too. So You know, it's frustrating that Kupchak would even really say something like that, because like you mentioned, Jacob, he's very kind of like politically correct, like doesn't really say, like he's like the most boring interview I think I've ever seen.
Very you know, much.
Doesn't he almost sounds like he's just like half asleep all the time, but yeah, just really frustrating that they're not prioritizing development, because it's been with the head coach and now obviously the front office. So hopefully Kobe can kind of spark a change in that area. So, but we'll see. We'll see. Hopefully there's just a lot more nights like tonight where the young guys took over the fourth quarter. So, all right. So that's going to do it for the talking points. We'll go ahead and dive into the questions that we got after the game. And speaking of the future, this I think we can all agree on this question from Josiah Woods at JWoods2014. Said, this fourth quarter showed me the future. Do you guys agree?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we all agree. Although, I mean, hopefully it's not the future for Randle, because I mean he kind of struggled again offensively, but no, Russell was phenomenal. Russell, he's a microwave pretty much. I mean, he can just get hot at any moment. So.
And it also kind of showed that Russell and Clarkson can work together. Obviously, this offense is not going to be very helpful to them working together. It's just a lot of kind of ISO. You do it once, and I'll do it once. But I mean, there were times where, you know, one of them would drive into the lane and kick out to the other one, or one of them would push it and transition and score. And I think that's a big thing, is that those two are starting to play together better, which is something they had struggled with kind of earlier in the season.
Yeah, and that was my biggest issue with taking Russell out of the starting lineup was, you know, those two need to get those minutes together if they're going to be our backcourt of the future. And Randall's got to be in there too. So, now on that note, well, actually leads us right into the next question. The guy I'm actually going to see the Lakers with in a couple weeks, my cousin / best friend, at Young Chun. How many games until Byron starts D'Angelo Russell again? Kyle, go ahead and take this one away.
Okay. Picking a random number out of my head, I'll go with 13, because that's how Byron seems to be doing things. If it were based on merit, he would start Russell tomorrow. Well, I mean, Russell has that injury, so as soon as Russell's healthy again, you would think he would start him, but it's impossible to know what goes on inside the mind of Byron Scott, so not even going to try there.
Yeah. I did see from Shoot Around this morning that Byron said the earliest he would make lineup changes will be after tomorrow's game against the Thunder. But imagine that they're going to get blown out and Byron's going to decide to change the lineups. So I'll say after tomorrow's game, Russell will be back in the lineup, especially after tonight. I mean, Russell is almost trying to kind of forcing his hand, putting himself in the starting lineup, I should say. So I think if not after this game, I mean, it's coming. I would say within a week and a half, I don't know how many games that is. I would say within the next 5 games, Russell will be back in the starting lineup, which is ridiculous that we even have to discuss that our number 2 pick is earning his way back into the starting lineup, but so be it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Byron seems to put 5 to 10 games on, well, I mean, basically any time frame that he sets for games ends in a 5 or 0, so I'll say 5 to 50 games somewhere in there, or however many are left. So we'll say 5 to 40 games. There we go.
So you're saying that he's going to start him in the playoffs then, when we get to the playoffs?
All right, so in the last game before tonight, Mr. No Locker, Tarik Black, got a few minutes in garbage time, and Paul James at Get Famous Today, nice. That's actually a pretty sweet Twitter handle, asked, should Tarik Black get a few minutes? He has the chance to develop. What do you guys think? I'll kind of piggyback on his question, because I think we all agree that he needs minutes, but what do you think his ceiling could be with this team, Jacob?
It's hard to say. I do know last year, I mean, he was the Lakers' best role guy in a pick and roll, and that seems to be the type of offense. Obviously, Russell's going to succeed in, Clarkson as well. And we were kind of talking before we came on. Roy Hibbert tonight, 12 minutes, one field goal attempt, two rebounds, one assist, five fouls. You're telling me Tarik Black can't do better than that? The other night he played, I believe, 7 minutes, had 4 points, four rebounds, albeit in garbage time, but still.
His per 36 was through the roof.
Yes, exactly. So, as in regards to his ceiling, it's kind of hard to say. He's always going to be an undersized big man. He can be an energy type of guy off the bench. I don't know that he'll ever be good enough to start, but I mean, we don't know that until we see him get more minutes. And again, something we said before we came on live, something I said, I mean, it would be one of the most Byron things ever after this long stretch of Tarik Black not playing to put him in the starting lineup and bench Roy Hibbert and we not see Roy Hibbert for the next 20 games. So, I mean, I think Tarik Black will get some time eventually, but with Byron, it's hard to tell when or if or anything like that.
Yeah, definitely. Kyle, what do you think, besides obviously just his energy, because we all know that's what really his forte is, what do you think makes Tarik Black so valuable and could be a valuable piece in the rotation?
Well, like Jacob said, I mean, he's one of the best pick-and-roll guys that we have on the team, which is very valuable when you have the number two overall pick who is fantastic at doing the pick and roll. So, I mean, that's one thing that he could fit into a rotational spot easily. As far as if Byron will ever actually start playing him, I think if one of our big men goes down, so like if Brandon Bass gets traded or gets injured or Roy Hibbert, you know, gets injured, I think that Byron will do the thing he did with Anthony Brown, which is never play Anthony Brown, and then Kobe's out, and now let's start Anthony Brown and play him for 36 minutes. So, I mean, we could see something like that, but as far as his value to the team, I think definitely offensively in the pick and roll, and then just blocking shots on defense, he has an insane amount of athleticism, and it's just really good to see him, you know, out on the floor in any capacity.
Yeah, and you know, that athleticism provides him like with a lot of versatility, right? You know, he can play the four or the five. You know, defensively, he's not like an elite rim protector like a Hassan Whiteside or somebody like that, you know. But, you know, he's a good positional defender, and he's got enough athleticism to where, like, he's going to alter shots, you know, better than, you know, say maybe Ryan Kelly or Robert Sacre or somebody like that. You know, and the effort's always there, like you mentioned, the pick and roll. He's the perfect like big off the bench, you know, to throw out there. So definitely want to see him get some more minutes, but he's trapped on what I call Byron Island, and
God,
they reined him back in apparently after that game because he didn't get out there tonight. But
and you kind of mentioned with his kind of his athleticism and his positioning. I mean, I think. Him and Larry Nance, I think, could be a pretty solid defensive front court. It couldn't be any worse than what we've been putting out. But I mean, it's frustrating because I feel like this is the type of season where you experiment with lineups and you experiment with rotations, and guys like Tarik Black aren't getting any minutes. And I had a debate with a couple guys about whether Larry Nance and Julius Randle could work together as a front court. Regardless of whether you think they would or not, this is the type of season where you throw them out there for a couple games and see how it goes. And Byron is just so anti. He only changes things once. It's like a mass overhaul, new lineup, new rotation. Then he has an arbitrary amount of numbers. We'll do this for 20 games, and then we'll discuss it again. And it's just like, that's not how this season should be, which, I mean, again, kind of goes back to the frustrations of him being a coach and him being allowed to do that. But, I mean, I do know, I think, I don't remember where I saw it on Twitter. Kupchak was talking before the game tonight, I believe, on TWC. He said he doesn't tell Byron to do anything as a coach, except for last year they sat down and decided, you know, Clarkson needed to play more, and it eventually led to him starting. I think Kupchak did also say that he expects there to be movement by them at the trade deadline. So I think once the trade deadline kind of passes, I know last year that's when we kind of got a look at a lot of the younger guys. Maybe it's, again, kind of blind hope, but I hope or I think that at that point we'll see a lot more different rotations, a lot more guys like Tarik Black, and more consistent time, hopefully, for Anthony Brown, where it isn't either starts or he doesn't play and stuff like that. So I'm kind of hopeful that we'll eventually get to a point where we'll see a lot more of these young guys like we did tonight, because, I mean, outside of Brandon Bass, that was four rookies, basically. Julius Randle's basically a rookie. And, well, three rookies and Clarkson, and led a comeback on the road against what essentially is a rival. So, I mean, there's reason for optimism. It's just you got to kind of force Byron to do what should be done.
Yeah, definitely. You know, pretty much, I mean, just hit the nail on the head. I mean, you know, it is what it is. We'd like to see Kupchak obviously step in and say, like, hey, you know, we need so-and-so to get some more minutes, and this guy needs less minutes. And it's like when you play 2K, right? You know, you get to set the rotation, even though you're not technically the coach. So I guess that's not how it works in the real world. okay, so this is the last question that we got. This is from @RaiderTruths. If you're a Raiders fan, you definitely want to follow him. I'm not a Raiders fan, but anyways.
So you make good life choices.
Oh, really? I root for the Tennessee Titans, so the Raiders are probably going to step up. Okay, so he asks, and we kind of talked about this, I think, on the last podcast or maybe a couple shows ago. But his first question, obviously, is what is the ceiling of D'Angelo Russell? What's his ceiling as a player? And how does he project as a defender? And I'll go ahead and start this one just because I talked about it a little bit, I think, last time. But I think D'Angelo Russell could be a superstar in this league. I think he can, you know, in 3 to 5 years, whatever the timeline you want, can be like a top five player in this league. I think he could be that good. You know, you see it like tonight, you know, in the fourth quarter, he just goes off. You know, I think once he strengthens his lower body, his shooting will come around. You know, it gets his legs stronger. He's not missing all these shots short and things like that. And the game just slows down for him even more. His passing ability is going to be on full display. And as far as his defense, he's got all the physical tools to be a really good defensive player. You know, he's 6'5 as a point guard. I think he has like a 6'9 or 6'10 wingspan. And his instincts are pretty good. You know, he's created a lot of turnovers this year. And I think that's something he can do consistently down the line. Kyle, would you agree with all that?
Absolutely, yeah. I think, like you said, he could be a superstar in, I'll say, 3 years for sure. You said 3 to 5. I think in the next 3 years he could be, you know, barring, like, you know, coaching and how the team is playing, he could be one of the elite guards in the league. Mm-hmm. But as far as him becoming a better defender, that just comes with getting onto the floor in crunch time and making those mistakes that a rookie would make. But, you know, just learning how to play in the NBA and, yeah, just going from there. He has all of the tools that he needs to become an all-star.
Yeah, sure. It takes those repetitions against the Steph Currys and the Russell Westbrooks, you know, of the NBA. Like, going up against the top-notch competition, you know, it brings the best out of you. It either brings the best out of you or you just crumble underneath it, you know, and Russell does not seem like the type that, you know, will crumble in those circumstances. He might, you know, when he's this age, but he's only going to get better from it. So, Jacob, what do you think Russell's ceiling is as a player and as a defender?
Well, I'll first kind of piggyback on something you just said about him not crumbling. I mean, I saw a tweet after the game where somebody said it's really frustrating to root for Russell because so many things outside of his control kind of slowing him down, whether it be, you know, mainly with Byron, obviously, starting him as a shooting guard, then benching him in fourth quarters, then outright benching him. Injuries have obviously tonight slowed him down, but I mean, as a 19-year-old, for him not to crumble is, I think, your kind of biggest sign of what's to come. If at 19 he can handle the pressure of being the number two pick in Kobe's shadow and are one of the two biggest markets in the league with a coach who isn't using him to the best of his abilities, we'll leave it at that. I mean, for him to shine like he did tonight, I think shows a lot about how he'll be. I do agree that, I mean, he's going to reach star level. I don't know that it'll necessarily come within 3 years. I think it's probably close to probably 5 years. But, I mean, he's making strides, and I think next year will be a big year for him because I assume Byron will be gone. Kobe will be gone. And I think this team's going to focus a lot more on him. I'm hesitant. He has such a smoothness about his game that at times it almost reminds me of how Steph Curry was. I don't want to say that he's obviously going to be Steph Curry because Steph Curry's a robot. I mean, just kind of the feel for the game he has, he just seems like, for a 19-year-old to make some of the plays he does and make some of the passes he does, it's just remarkable to think about. I mean, there are kids in college who are 3-4 years older than him who aren't anywhere near, can't see the floor as well as he does. And as a defender, I think one of you mentioned it, he has good enough instincts, high enough IQ that he puts himself in good positions. To where he'll, I don't know that he'll ever be necessarily an elite defender or anything like that. I know he has pretty good size, but I mean, he's leading the team in steals. So I mean, 1.2 a game, not a lot, but I mean, again, he's 19. So I think he's smart enough and has good enough instincts that he'll be able to not be a liability on defense. So, I mean, I'm really excited about Russell. And again, I mean, I've said it, but I mean, he's 19 and he just put 27 points on the Kings. I mean, there's so much reason for excitement with him.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we've seen those flashes this year of just amazing talent. And I've said this a number of times throughout the year that a 19-year-old is not supposed to have the skill set that he has. You know, it's just so unique, so remarkable. You know, simply put, the way I see D'Angelo Russell, he's a superstar talent with a superstar personality. You know, he was made to be, this might sound kind of cheesy or whatever, but I think he was made to be in Los Angeles. You know, he was made to be a Laker and be in Hollywood because that's just who he is. You know, he's just a very outgoing, very, you know, kind of flashy kind of guy. And I think he's a guy that Laker fans, you know, he may never be endeared like Kobe is, but, you know, he's going to be a fan favorite for sure. So, all right, I think that's going to do it for us. That was all the questions that we had, and we covered a lot of stuff today. This was a lot of fun. So thanks to everybody that followed us, followed along. Thanks to those that sent us questions. We always appreciate those, even if they're, of course, Honey just tweeted that. But just thanks to those that followed along. And like I said, we love those questions, even if they're about random things like potatoes or whatever the hell you guys send us.
There were no potato questions because I didn't submit them today.
Jacob, Kyle, as always, guys, thanks for joining me on here. We'll definitely look to try and get a podcast going after tomorrow's game, unless we're all just blackout drunk because the Lakers are getting beat by But yeah, so stay tuned for that. And as I mentioned, we got some good material on the site. The last couple posts have been really good. We got Jacob's piece. Hani wrote about Tarik Black, and we've got some good stuff on there. So be sure to check that out on LakersOutsiders.com. For Jacob and Kyle, I'm Gary Kessler signing off, and we'll see you guys next time.